Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm your host, Albert Morales, and this morning's conversation is with Mitchell Glassman, Director of the Division of Resolutions and Receiverships at the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation. Also joining us in our conversation from IBM is Dennis Kayser. Mitchell, you can't pick up a newspaper today without seeing that the home foreclosure rate has nearly doubled in the past 2 years. I also read that an estimated 1.7 million homeowner-occupied subprime hybrid adjustable mortgages, that's sort of a mouthful, are set to reschedule over the next couple years. Now, the combination of declining home prices and scarce refinancing options may result in even more foreclosures. So how has the subprime mortgage crisis and the resulting credit crunch impacted the FDIC? And what role does the FDIC play in working with the market to develop solutions that might help prevent unnecessary foreclosures and keep homeowners in their home?
Obviously, the FDIC, as we talked about before, is to maintain confidence in the banking system. And one of the things that we have done, not only through our chairman, but through our board, is to work with the institutions, not only for those who have these type of loan products on their books, that to be not only cautious, but to be very careful about how they handle them, but also that this is a consumer issue that has, you know, a wide net that it seems to be carrying. So for the financial institutions that we insure, you know, we want them to be careful. We want them to do the right thing. But, you know, if indeed they need to get more capital, you know, we try to work with them to get more capital, to also, to, you know, to handle their servicing in a way that allows borrowers to try to recast their loans so they do not have to go through foreclosure. I would tell you that we're also been very, very proactive in financial literacy and working with outside groups to try to work with the consumer. We have a very, very strong belief that foreclosure is not a good option for the banks. We feel working with the borrowers and recasting their loans is a better way to minimize losses and also keep the home prices stable, because foreclosures are not good for the country. They're not going to be good for the banks.
So we talked earlier about the number of bank failures and closures per year. I understand that there were, I think, three FDIC-insured banks that failed last year. I'm sure that all three of these posed their unique set of challenges for you, but I understand that one of them was particularly challenging in that it was an internet bank, which did not have any physical branch offices. How do you deal with this, and to what extent did closing such a large internet bank require you to modify and rethink your receivership processes?
That's a good question. Any insured institution we have to be prepared for. And when you speak of an internet bank, for your listeners who may not know what an internet bank, but this is basically an institution where the customer basically deals with that bank either through an internet portal or through some other means, whether it's an ATM. They do not have a physical branch in many cases, and they do not have a main bank to be able to transact business. So we're basically dealing with a core base of customers in a virtual world. These type of institutions have a lot of technology that they're deploying, sometimes on multiple platforms, sometimes in different locations. And for us to be able to handle that, and again, this was our preparation, you know, because we had dealt with something similar, that we wanted to be certain that we were able to still do our deposit insurance determination, get the money in the hands of depositors. But we were also very fortunate in a sense that ING Direct, you know, which is also another internet provider, was able to purchase those particular customers, which then left us with the receivership. But for us to plan such a very difficult type closings, we had to be in the right place with the right people. We had to be certain that, A, if you shut down the internet portal, you know, we had it up and running within 2 hours and gave access to money to people very, very quickly. So whether it's a community bank or a virtual bank like this internet bank, you know, we move very quickly, but you have to plan for it. You cannot just walk in and say, whoops, where do I go?
Mitchell, while the number of bank failures has been quite low in recent years, there's certainly some speculation that the number of failures is going to increase potentially in the relatively near future. Can you tell us what you may be doing to prepare for an increase in bank failures?
Well, Dennis, I have to tell you that, you know, that question comes up quite frequently, but, you know, I sort of ignored, you know, the idea of whether there's one bank or 100 banks. It really doesn't matter. You know, the FDIC is going to be ready. It doesn't matter what size, what location. So even though there is a deep concern about the financial health of the industry, I think one thing that consumers and depositors can be reassured, they shouldn't worry. You know, the fact is the FDIC is going to stand by those deposits. They're going to efficiently handle the receiverships, and that we're prepared to go to any lengths to be able to, you know, make sure that we meet our obligations. So, you know, I'm not concerned, and I don't think anybody else should be.
Great. You know, we've heard you talk about how the FDIC places a high priority, right, on getting the deposits back in the consumer's hands in a timely manner. Can you tell us what first are some of the critical reasons that it's so important to get those deposits back into the person's hands so quickly? And then maybe some examples of how by doing that, you are supporting that local economy and those depositors and the impact that that has.
The way our financial system works, to be able to have deposits available, if you think about it, you pay your mortgage, you have to go to the drugstore, you go to the grocery store, you have to pay your doctors. All of this is through the handling of either checks or through cash. And if you take away the ability of depositors or customers to transact business or to issue checks where they may not be accepted by the merchant or vendor, it starts to create a lack of confidence because all of a sudden, this bank in this community may have failed, but what about my bank down the street? So our ability to get insured deposits back to consumers is so important because we want to be able to demonstrate not only that community, but everybody else that's in that community and throughout the country who have their deposits at banks, that should be the least of their concerns that they're not going to have access. I would tell you that in certain countries, you know, that doesn't always happen. I would tell you before the FDIC, it took years for people to get their money back. So that is one of the main things that we do is to be able to get money back in the hand so they can be utilized within the local economy.
So, Mitchell, you've talked about how a consumer would get their insured deposits back in a timely manner. So is there a scenario that you can talk to us about where depositors might not get all of their money back because it's not all an insured deposit?
Unfortunately, that does happen. We do have depositors that have placed money into the institution that was beyond our FDIC insurance limit. You know, currently it's $100,000. There are certain accounts that are, you know, that are retirement accounts that are up to $250,000. But if the customer has excess funds, then what ends up happening, they become uninsured depositors. And they would share in the proceeds of any collections that we have out of the receivership. So we would pay later on as we liquidate the assets, we would pay them a dividend for their uninsured portion. For instance, if somebody had $110,000, we would pay them $100,000. We would give them a receiver certificate for $10,000. But because of the efficiency we try to deploy and depending on the value of the assets, we may be able to return 80% of that portion. So we may be able to pay them $8,000 over the time of the receivership. So net-net, they did lose, but it would be $2,000, not the full $10,000.
So you're always trying to drive to make people as whole as possible, but folks should realize that there are some limitations.
That's here. Absolutely correct, and that's something that I would encourage, you know, your listeners and anybody else that you know that has deposits that they do check on their insurability. They can check on the FDIC's website, www.fdic.gov, and they would be able to get help in getting answering their questions on about insured deposits.
Great. Mitchell, in the past few years, we've seen a range of natural disasters within our country. Would you tell us about the role FDIC might play in the response to a natural disaster? What about the regulatory relief that FDIC may provide to insured financial institutions in the event they sustain significant damage as a result of a natural disaster or that may service those affected areas by such an event.
You know, Al, that's probably one that I'm probably the proudest about, even though, you know, it's not involving bank failures or supervision. But the fact is the FDIC, because of its experience, I will give you an example. During Hurricane Katrina, you know, the FDIC was one of the first to provide call center support so that people who wanted to know if their banks were opened and where they would be able to find an ATM were able to call, you know, the FDIC and actually get people to answer and to actually direct them to where they can get help. I would tell you that our supervision people were also very much in there. They basically made sure banks were able to reopen, that they had their backup systems, made sure that they had the help. They actually helped banks partner with other banks that had to share lobbies, but also that if there was some kind of relief that needed to be made for the borrowers, you know, we also send out, you know, notices to say, you know, if indeed a borrower's been harmed, that there are certain things that the banks would be allowed to do to work with those borrowers. So we have a multiple approach, but I think when it comes to disaster, the FDIC has a very good track record of consumer protection, but also being very sensitive to the needs of the bank to get open as quickly as possible. Again, it all stems from our confidence in the banking system, and we feel that we are very major players in that.
That's great. That's a very significant issue here in our country. So we spent a fair amount of time talking about the financial system here within the U.S. Could you elaborate on perhaps an increasing leadership role that the FDIC is playing on a global scale? To what extent are foreign governments looking to the FDIC as a model for either establishing or strengthening their own system of deposit insurance and bank supervision?
The FDIC has taken a very, very strong leadership role. Foreign countries are trying to get their own banking system up and running because they know that's very much intricately part of their own economic well-being. And they look to the FDIC not only to develop their own deposit insurance system, but also our way of regulation, but also the way we handle bank failures. We have been very much active in the International Association of Deposit Insurers. We call it IADI. Matter of fact, our vice chairman, Marty Grunberg, is the chairman of this committee. So we do training. We provide folks to help them with drafting their own legislation. We help actually teach them some of the functions that go along with this activity and have a lot of what I call open communication that goes on constantly. So we're very proud of the fact that we feel that also helping these countries develop their banking system is also good for the United States and also for the global economy.
That's fantastic. What does the future hold for the FDIC's Division of Resolutions and Receiverships? We will ask Mitchell Glassman, Director of the Division of Resolutions and Receiverships at the FDIC, to share with us when the conversation about management continues on the Business of Government Hour.